You're now listening to La Verdad Podcast. How's everybody doing today? This is Christian Alekin with La Verdad Podcast, and we also have...
Saludos, it's Carlos, and I'm happy to be here once again. Made the drive down to Chicago.
Yeah, you know, it's been a while for Carlos to come out here. Actually, no, last month you were here, right?
Yeah, okay. We've been good about going back and forth.
Yeah, so we try to go once a month to the different areas. Like, yeah. I'll drive up to Grand Rapids, or he'll come down to Chicago.
Film a couple shows each time.
We're trying to kill two birds with one stone today. So we're gonna be doing a little barbecue get together with some of our friends and fraternity mm-hmm. brothers, and at the same time, we're honored to have a guest here today, and coming all the way from the south side of Chicago. You might have heard him in different areas, in different venues, and we're actually delighted and grateful to have him here with us today, and we're going to be able to do a interview with student minister Abel Mohammed. So thank you for showing up today and coming to our show today.
No, it's my honor and my pleasure, and hopefully we can share something with your listeners and our people that'll help them in whatever they're dealing with today, and help our people in general just live better lives.
Yeah, and you know, we were just talking before the show started out that you're actually going through your Ramadan fast, right? Mm-hmm. So can you explain to us a little bit about that?
Yeah, Ramadan is actually the month. It's the name of the month in the Muslim calendar, and it's the month where the Holy Quran was first revealed to Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him. And we take it as a fast. Since the Arabic calendar is a lunar calendar, it changes every year here in the United States in terms of where it falls. Right now it happens to fall in the middle of the summer, where we have about 18, 19 hours of sunlight.
Oh, wow.
And what we do is we take no water, no food, no intimate relations with our spouses during the daylight, and to focus exclusively on our Creator. We try to especially make all of our prayers. We try to, at about 8:30 at night, 9 o'clock, once the sun is down and we take our food again, it's not about just you feeding your family.
Yeah,
it's also making sure you know you have food in your refrigerator waiting for you, but it's to make us sensitive that there are so many millions of people that don't have something to eat. So us restraining our natural desire to eat, knowing we have food, it makes us compassionate, knowing that that little bit of hunger we felt, there's some people that they're not going to be able to quench that tonight.
Yeah.
And so it gives us a little bit of compassion. And that's another thing we're supposed to do, is feed the hungry. And in particular, just in general, try to abstain from arguments, from sin of any kind.
Okay.
Because if we can do it for 30 days, then we can do it for 2 months. Yeah. We can do it for 6 months, and we can do it for a year. And it's to strengthen our discipline.
Yeah. Make that your daily practice, ultimately.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And how many years have you been... doing like the whole fasting
I've been doing the fast since 1992-93 when I first became a Muslim.
Since the first,
but back then we were first taught by the Honorable Elijah Muhammad to do the fast in December. He had prescribed for his followers here in America to do their fast in December, which we know those are the shortest days. So it was a little easier, but if you're first starting, that's difficult even too.
Yeah.
And then in the 90s, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, when he had traveled to Arabia during Ramadan and was there, he wrote back and asked us to now begin taking the fast with the rest of the Muslim world during the appropriate month, which is not unusual, as you know, the Quran constantly tells us. There are you're never excused from the fast, but if you, for example, are sick or on a journey, you're not expected to fast.
Okay.
So, for example, I have allergy medication that I have to take. I can't take that on an empty stomach. So the fast is not intended to harm you. It's intended to alleviate you. Or if you're traveling is very different. You shouldn't be drowsy. You shouldn't be sleepy. Yeah. So there are reasons where you're permitted to then make up those days.
Yeah.
And you can do it by feeding the poor or by simply doing the fast after the month is done. But okay. we try to do it when there's almost 2 billion people yeah. fasting at the yeah. same time. It's a different energy.
I bet it does feel, yeah, it feels like powerful. A unity. Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah, because, you know, I'm Catholic. Mm-hmm. You know, I was born into Catholicism, right. and then we also do practice Lent, you know.
Exactly.
And we have that little time where it's not as we don't have, you know, some people might do certain different things for exactly. Lent. So, you know, for me, it was the whole not eating meat on Fridays exactly. kind of thing. And I was like, man, why do I have to do this? But then later on in life, as an adult, I was able to understand it and not just understand it, but appreciate
absolutely
what we were doing. Yeah. You know, because at first, when I was doing it, it was more like, oh, tradition, you know, it's and then after I understood what it was, mm-hmm. then I was like, oh, you know what, like, this gives me more appreciation yeah. of what I have.
Yeah, and you know, one of the key things we try to do during Ramadan, as during Lent, is yeah. you know, your spiritual observation. Mm-hmm. You're recognizing that there's nothing more important than that spiritual aspect of your life mm-hmm. from the Creator. And the more in tune we get in that, that's where the real discipline comes from.
Okay.
Building our will, knowing that if I can do it in the summer, and I need water to live.
Yeah.
It's you can't live without it. But if I can discipline myself to say, I'm not going to permit myself to drink it till a certain time, and my will builds to that degree, yeah. then how difficult will it be to say to the cigarette, which I don't need, mm. I'm not going to pick it up.
Yeah.
Or the drug or whatever else it may be that's negative in our yeah. lives. It, yeah. it helps us to really discipline every aspect of our life by getting us more in tune with our nature and the Creator.
Okay. That's, yeah. And we jumped right into Ramadan, but one of the things you mentioned a little while ago was that you are a follower of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad mm-hmm. and Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan.
Yes.
Just to give the people kind of a background, who are you, where are you from, and how did you actually come mm-hmm. into contact with the teachings?
You know, my family, I was born and raised in Chicago. Okay. Grew up in, my family had some businesses, my aunts and uncles in Little Village.
Okay.
But we grew up in between Little Village, Inglewood, then West Lawn and Market Park areas, where mm-hmm. I remember we were one of the first non-white families in Market Park yeah. in the early 80s.
Oh, wow.
I still remember them having the Klan rallies there at Market Park.
Wow.
And if you go to Market Park now on a Saturday or Sunday, it's all us in the yeah. park. So it's pretty drastic. I've lived to see the big difference. But my family's from Querétaro, okay. Tequisquiapa in Mexico. And about half of my family now lives here. The other half still lives in Mexico. But my family has been here. I was the first of my siblings born here in the United States.
Okay.
My three older siblings were all born in Tequisquiapa. And I came here, or I was born here after my family came here. And I have a younger sister born here as well.
Okay.
We went to, like I said, grew up in Inglewood, 53rd and Marshfield.
Yeah.
The house uh-huh. we grew up in is gone now. It's just a vacant lot.
Wow.
Then we moved over to, like I said, Market Park and West Lawn, where my parents now mm-hmm. still live and have been living for about 20 years. But I got introduced to the teachings while I was in high school at Whitney Young High School here okay. in Chicago. Right. And I didn't know it at the time, but Minister Farrakhan's granddaughter was a classmate of mine. She was a year younger than me in high school. I didn't even know who she was. She was that kind of low-key person.
Yeah, yeah.
And the only thing I remember, she would always encourage me once I started reading the teachings of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. I didn't know who Minister Farrakhan was, to be honest yeah. with you. I mean, being a Chicano, coming from that background,
mm-hmm.
I didn't have any exposure. Mm-hmm. The only people I knew was Dr. King, Cesar yeah. Chavez, you know, and barely about them, to be yeah. honest with you. I have an uncle who's an archbishop who now lives in Mexico, but he lived in the Vatican all the years wow. that I was growing okay. up. Mm-hmm. And he would come to the United States to do a mass in Milwaukee about every 3 to 5 years. He would do a mass in Chicago in Garfield Park
yeah.
and then one up in Milwaukee at this big outdoor mass yeah. thing. And I remember I'd always want to interact with him and ask him questions about God because I was fascinated by
yeah.
God.
Yeah.
And I just never liked the answers he gave me. Even as a little 7, 8-year-old mm-hmm. kid, I was like, you know, I felt like, A, he was either lying to me or didn't know and didn't want to tell me he didn't know. And yeah. and never sat well with me.
Uh-huh.
And then I was introduced to sort of other than Catholic ideas from one of my older brothers who became a born-again Christian.
Okay.
And that was when I was in grammar school. And he introduced me to some, you know, I liked comic books. So he had these born-again Christian comic books and stuff. And I started reading stuff in there. And it resonated a little bit yeah. with me. But I still went to mass on Sundays. Even mm-hmm. as a little kid, I would be the only one who got up in my house, and I'd walk down to the on yeah. Sunday to mass. My parents and none of my other siblings did. I loved it
yeah.
because I wanted to learn about God.
Yeah.
But even when I took my catechism in the Catholic Church, and when I went to those classes and they'd allow us to ask questions, the answers I always got were always, you know, well, there's certain things we can't understand, or that we're not supposed to understand, that it's too big for us to understand.
Too big for us, yeah.
And it never settled well with me, because I just felt like if God put it in me to want to know, why would he then not give me an avenue by which to know? And I felt like it was the adults being not genuine with me. I'd prefer they have told me I don't know the answer to that question rather than to say I'm not supposed to know the answer to that question. And so finally, when I read a book called How to Eat to Live in high school, one of my classmates was a Muslim. He was a year ahead of me also. And he was reading this book. He was always odd. He didn't dress like us. He didn't look like us. And he gave me, or I saw him reading this book, and on the cover it said, "From God in Person."
Okay.
I'd never seen a book say anything like that before. Right. I said, "What is that?" And he said, it's a book on the dietary law we follow." I didn't know what a Muslim was. I didn't know any of that stuff. So I said, "Well, I didn't like reading." I said, "Let me check it out." And I read it, and it was just literally a dietary law from the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. And the book's called How to Eat to Live. And I read it, and for whatever reason, it resonated with me. I started following it.
Wow.
It wasn't really about religion. It was really about
things. It's a good book. I haven't read it all, but I read some of it.
And it's real basic. It really is saying that the way that the law of Moses tells us to eat is the right way to eat. It goes real basic. It's not even about Quran.
So certain things that you shouldn't eat.
The biggest thing being that it immediately said stop eating pork.
Okay.
Because it's you know, he said even going back to the law given to Moses, it's something we're not supposed to touch. I started with that, and then it gets us down to one meal a day. So I've been eating one meal a day since 1990, approximately.
Wow.
And again, that's another discipline.
One big meal a day? Or? Not
really. At first, yes. But then as you get older, your body, like right now during Ramadan, if I have a burger that late at night, I'm totally spent and ready to go to bed. So it's all really your body will tell you what you need. And we do that. We eat once a day and we fast 3 days every month. We're literally from the first Thursday through the first Sunday. We don't, after we eat our meal on Thursday, we won't eat again or till Sunday. And that's a fast that we as followers of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad take every month. And again, that's just for spiritual reasons, but it also physically helps purify and cleanse your body from any toxins still in it from the food that we eat.
Interesting.
And so my introduction to the teachings was not really from religion. It was more from food and diet, which I never was interested in. And then after I read that, I asked him what else I could read, because it just all was logical to me. And he gave me a book called Message to the Black Man in America to read. And once I read that, the first 3-4 chapters in it about who is God, it answered every question I'd ever asked.
I've read the first couple of chapters of that one too.
And to me, it just resonated with me, because it was a logical explanation of God. And still keeping him in his divinity, but from a perspective that I, especially in high school, I could wrap my mind around it, that God made me the way I am, reflective of him.
Yeah,
I'm not equal to him, but there is some of him in me, and that's part of what makes me special. And that's really the essence of what the teachings that I read from Message to the Black Man and I've gotten from Minister Farrakhan are. It's not to make you something else. It's to let you be what you were born to be. That's the root of it.
And I find it very interesting, too, that your hunger to understand and your hunger to know who God is, right, is what led you to the path of where you're at right now. And a lot of times in our culture, you know, being Latinos, right, a lot of things are answered with you're not supposed to know. And I could see that, you know, when you were explaining that, I kind of visually thought to myself, like, yeah, you asking like a priest or somebody, but no, mijo, you can't.
Don't worry about it.
Yeah, don't worry about it. You'll learn later on. And it will piss me off as a kid, you know, like, man, I want to know. Because Carlos and I, we share that same kind of, we always want to read more into things, you know, we want to look into things. So as a kid, I was the same way, and I will read so much into religion and all that. So I find it interesting that you had that same path, and it led you to where you're at now.
I think it's natural for all of our people to be that way. You know, that's why we, even when you look at like the indigenous people and the things that the way that they express what they understood about nature, it was always with an eye towards understanding that there's a reality beyond what you see. And it's in the nature of human beings that God put it in us to understand that there's a verse in the Quran that says that there are those who believe in the seen and the unseen, because what you see is created by something unseen. So even though we're here talking, this is just the vehicle that we're in.
Yeah.
You know, so what happened? Where did this come from? What animates this? And that's, to me, that God force, that essence, yeah. if you will. And there's only, the Quran says that Allah, God, is the only reality.
Yeah.
So then everything else is an expression of Him.
Mm.
And so then when you, that's why the animals are sacred. All life is sacred. As Muslims, we can't even eat food that a prayer hasn't been said over it before it was taken.
Okay. Yeah. So, before it was cooked or
before it was killed, even before it goes all the way back to the slaughterhouse. Yeah.
They would thank, you know, Mother Nature or the, you know, they would thank the buffalo before killing the buffalo.
Yep, exactly.
But you know, on the topic of God, I was the same way. I used to piss me off. And so that's actually how I started. That's how I found kind of some of those YouTube videos of Minister Farrakhan. I found some of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad. Yeah. But one book that I really liked was, I think I read it when I was like a junior in college. Well, I think it was called The Book of God by Dr. Wesley Muhammad.
I just missed him. I was just leaving.
Yeah, and it's a big book, like, you know, 400 or 500 pages. But I went through it all in about 2 or 3 days.
Yeah.
And so I also all the ideas weren't new to me since I had been studying, you know, like some mystical traditions. Right. And so this whole concept of man having divinity within him. Mm-hmm. Could you maybe talk a little bit about what your perspective is based on your studies, that relationship between God and man and what it all means for us?
You know, the Minister Farrakhan was at the mosque 2 weeks ago talking about the life of and times of Muhammad Ali.
Mm.
And he said the thing we have to look at, he said, what made Muhammad Ali great, what made Malcolm X great, and this is the thing that the world always misses, what are the chances that both of these giants of the world in history had the same teacher? Yeah. And the world points at the students and nobody ever points at the teacher.
Uh-huh.
And the teacher of both of them is the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. And the thing that got Malcolm and they got Muhammad Ali is that the Honorable Elijah Muhammad taught that God is a man, like a physical human being, which coming from a Catholic Christian perspective was not that far-fetched to me because I always believed Jesus was God.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a man, not only a man, but man still. Yeah. So, and in the scripture in particular where it says, you know, we made man in our image and after our likeness.
Yeah.
I'd read it all my life and no one had ever explained it to me the way the Honorable Elijah Muhammad did. And it really is at the root of what's wrong in the world right now. Our young people are willing to kill each other because they don't see it as valuable, the other life.
Exactly.
If my life's not valuable, how could the life that looks like mine be valuable? And that's something that's been taken from us. And it starts with the way we've disrespected the woman. Because if we understood the proper role of the woman, then anything that she produces, if we understood her divinity, then everything that comes with her for it have to be seen as sacred. And her sacredness has been devalued. And, you know, it's an artificial kind of synthetic reality we've been given where God is some big thing that you can't grasp.
Yeah.
Yet you're supposed to appreciate all that he's made us and made around us. But somehow he's disconnected from us and we can't really access him. And to me, that's what really opened it up was when I could access the fact that part of God is actually in me. That the thing that makes me special is that he's in me. And it connects all of the scriptures from Moses to Jesus to Muhammad, where, you know, Jesus said, if when we knock, will you open up and let me in?
Yeah.
Well, what's the me that he's talking about? He's not talking about a physical door. He's talking about the heart, the mind of a person. So the same with Prophet Muhammad, you know, that they bring a message, but if we don't accept the message and then live by the tenets of that message, doesn't matter what we call ourselves. So to me, that's what it was. I saw in the example of Minister Farrakhan, a pattern that I could look at in a human being and see how God wants me to live my life. I can't be Minister Farrakhan. It would be unjust to myself.
Yeah.
He made him a special way. He made you a special way. Yeah. Me. We're not trying to be like one another, but we're trying to see the best in one another.
Yeah.
The discipline, the things that help make that person, the faith, the courage, the love. Then I can try to imitate those things and have that grow in me and then express whatever God has put in me. Because ultimately, that's what makes us what we are. He's given each of us life and a purpose and an aim. And until we are living that aim, we'll never be happy.
Yeah. And you'll find actually remnants of the same thoughts that you were just expressing in traditions all over the world. All over the world. You know, Islam has mystic traditions that will give some of those thouts of Christianity. I was just, before you came in, Christian and I were talking about that. They have their own mystical tradition. I've meditated with some Buddhists and we were kind of chopping it up, talking about what they think God is or who God is and what that means for us. And so I think the more you study, sometimes those of us who kind of grew up within a Catholic or Christian tradition, or even any of the kind of Judeo-Christian traditions, your first thought is to push it away and say, oh, no, we can't even touch that. And I don't, that's not my style. I like to keep kind of pursuing that path to see what it comes down to. Yeah. And so I'm kind of glad that you were able to break that down for the listeners.
And I think you hit a real big point there, where, you know, where young men are killing each other, especially young Latino men, black men are killing each other because they don't see themselves as divine, right?
Yeah.
They don't see a self-value or value, you know. Like, I remember growing up too, like, a lot of times I would, to me, the thought of having to kill someone or anything like that, that's like, was very, very bad, right? Like, it's like, no, like, you're actually, you stopped their life right then and there. And nowadays they talk about it in songs or movies, and it's very, we're so desensitized by it, right? Yeah. It's just so, like, you know, because we don't have that connection. I don't know if it's because we've lost our connection with God, or we lost that
knowledge of ourselves.
Exactly. And nowadays, I think that made a big point right then and there, that because we don't see ourselves as divine, or we don't have that, you know, God in us kind of mentality, it's so easy for all this violence
to be happening. It's not like the generic God thing where it's like you got to have a specific label for it. Because like what you just said, knowledge of self.
Yep.
The fact is, that is the knowledge of God. But we've never been to, when we think about ourselves, we don't ever think of it in the context of, this is sacred.
Yeah.
This is only the only life we have. And it's invaluable, but it's been made to us to have no value.
Yeah.
So we're just waiting to get out of here to go someplace else, not knowing where that someplace else is. If there is a someplace else, nobody's ever come back to tell us about it. So we got to just wait. Yep. And we, this is the only life we know. And everybody else around us is living a life like that. But our people are living it, just trying to, whatever, get by and get out of here. And that's why right now I saw the statistic that the highest rate of depression and suicide is to be a young Latina girl. And I have three daughters. So, I mean, I'm looking at those statistics saying...
So, all of us in here have daughters.
Yeah, exactly. I have one son and then three daughters. My son's at Southern Illinois University. But
I saw that statistic and it resonated hard. I have a daughter. Yeah. He has a daughter as well. And it's like, I was sitting there and I'm like, man, you know, what's
going on? Something is missing. And I'm looking even at my daughter, even with the teaching she's been given. My oldest daughter, who's 14 now, she's a freshman, or just, she'll be a junior now. A sophomore now, excuse me. She fights with it because... If you give them any access to the media and what it feeds young girls, especially if even if they're white, it doesn't matter. The women are totally devalued in this society. Yeah. But if you turn on, you know, any kind of Latino television, I mean, the woman is, if it's the news, they're half naked on the news.
Yep. Yeah. Yep.
And sexualized, not just like, oh, this is some, I'm freeing myself and expressing my liberty to do this. It's a sexualized thing. The weather women on Spanish TV is absolutely ridiculous. And it's not in any way empowering to young girls. I'm seeing it in my daughters and in the music, the expression. There was another study that I saw where young, in particular Black and Latina, but women in general, are not going into engineering because they don't see themselves in there. So they immediately abandon the process because it doesn't look like a place for them. So you see this attack. And so then if the girl doesn't see value in herself, if she has no hope for life, then what is she possibly putting into anything that comes from her womb? That she feeds directly to. And I think it's not by accident. That's absolutely designed. And that's why the knowledge, that information, the more, like you mentioned earlier, brother, you dig, you start seeing the similarities in things. And there's a verse in the Quran that says that Allah, God, made us into tribes and families that we might know one another. Yeah. And usually when we think about differences, you don't necessarily see it from that perspective. We tend to, in this world, see differences as things that keep us divided from one another.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, you go to that school of thought, I'm not going over there. You're from that neighborhood, oh, that's different. Versus God is saying, well, I'm the author of those differences. So, and I made it so that you might know one another. And I always heard the minister quote that, and it means something different to me now, because I think the base of it is knowledge. In your family, in your tradition, you've come up a certain way that I didn't.
Yeah.
And once we interact, if I'm not afraid to observe you and get close to you, then I could benefit from how you were raised, even though I wasn't raised that way. And that's something we never are taught to look at each other that way. And, and it's something, you know, as Mexicans and Puerto Ricans, it's always this weird division that's existed versus seeing that, wow, there's actually something I can gain from that. As Muslims and Christians, instead of seeing the difference, saying, wow, that's, I can gain something from that. Both on both sides of the equation. And yesterday, Minister Farrakhan gave the sermon at our congregational Juma service. And he mentioned that, that there's something that the Muslim world of the East, we have to learn from them. But there's also something they have to learn from us. And I think that's just a universal principle. That's why God sets and makes things different, not so that they can just harp on the differences, but you can actually see there's a reason for the difference, and it's actually for the benefit of everyone. Because if everything was the same, nothing would ever get changed or done.
Now, being that, you know, a lot of our listeners might be new to to what the Nation of Islam is, or new to Islam itself, you know, the whole concept of, you know, we tend to have a lot of our listeners are like from the age of 18-25, a lot of Latinos, and as you know, a lot of Latinos have grown up Catholic or in Christianity. So can you explain real quick what Nation of Islam is? And
yeah, the Nation of Islam was begun here in 1930 formally in the United States when Master Fard Muhammad, who was born in Arabia in 1877, February 26th. He's born of a black father and a white mother.
Okay.
And he came, he looked kind of like Latino because of that mixture. And if you see a picture of him, the only, we only have one picture of him. And it's a picture where he's reading the Holy Quran.
Okay.
And he came and he found the Honorable Elijah Muhammad in Detroit. But before he, that was in around September of 1931. But he made himself known in July 4th. 1930, which is actually this, we consider it our independence too, July 4th in 1930, when he made himself known. But he came to declare our independence from our oppressors versus our independence from so-called slavery or colonialism. But he found Elijah Muhammad and taught Elijah Muhammad and then left after teaching him for about 3.5 years, 3 years and 4 months approximately. He taught him day and night. And the last correspondence that we have is a note, like a letter that he sent from the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. But Master Fard Muhammad was in Mexico. The last correspondence we have from him is from Mexico in 1934.
Wow.
And the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan told me there was a period of 7 years when the Honorable Elijah Muhammad was teaching what he taught, that the original man is what's called the Asiatic black man. And his language had never been heard before. In 1930s, he told us that white people were devils. In 1930, he was teaching this publicly. He got a police escort to U-Line Arena in 1959 to teach in Washington, D.C. That the white man is the devil. And then, you know, in the 50s and 60s, black men were being lynched for saying way less than that. So the fact that he was able to say this and nothing happened lets you know that there's something to it. Now, it's not a broad brush where we believe every single person with white skin is a devil. That's that's silly. But he was pointing a picture that if somebody deprives you of what God wants for you, what is that? If he's an open opposer to God, there's a word for that. That is devil. And now anyone can be a devil. But there's a race of people who have, wherever they found dark people, they deprived us of freedom. Does God want freedom for us? Yes. They deprived us of justice. Do we have justice yet? No. They deprived us of equity. Are we treated equal with the rest of society still? No. So then what is that human being? Not from a spooky sense, but in a spiritual terminology, it would be called devil. It would be an open opposer to the will of God. They may not necessarily have wanted to be that, but that's what the work that they're doing. Now, if you look at society today, we're not worried about white people coming into our neighborhoods and mistreating us. We're mistreating ourselves. So they've made us into little devils after them. So it's not a color thing, you know, because Master Farad Muhammad looked like what we would call white people. So how could we love him if we hated white-skinned people?
We got
a wonderful relationship with Father Flager on the white side. He's white, blonde hair, blue eyes. But his work, that's what you judge a human being by, on their work. But that's the work that Master Fard Muhammad started with the Honorable Elijah Muhammad in the 30s to put into, in particular, black people and the dark-skinned people, the aboriginal people of this hemisphere, the fear of only God. That this other human being who you've allowed to mistreat you, they're just a man like you. And when even in the 30s, when he was teaching in Detroit, there was a Mexican brother, Henry Almanza, who, people don't know this, but he was friends with Master Fard Muhammad in Detroit, Michigan, when he started teaching.
Okay.
And he was married to a black woman up there. What I heard from his family was that he used to be, he was part of the revolution in Mexico. And in the 1910, 1914, he came up to the United States and got married after everyone was fleeing for so much destruction going on. And when he met and married this woman, she became a follower and joined the mosque under Master Fard Muhammad and the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. But he became great friends, Henry Almanza. But Master Fard Muhammad asked him not to join the temple at that time.
Okay.
Because he was specifically trying to deal with dark and the black people because they had been treated the worst of everybody, he said. And he didn't. But his whole family joined the mosque, and Henry Almanza, who was Mexican, his wife Mary, they were some of the first people to be arrested for spreading Islam and taking their children out of the public schools in the 1930s and 40s. Mm. So Mexican involvement in the Nation of Islam goes back to its very, very beginning.
Yeah, the beginning.
And even the fact, like I said, that the last letter we have from Master Fard Muhammad is from Mexico. And there was a period between the 40s and early 50s when hypocrites were trying to kill the Honorable Elijah Muhammad for what he was teaching us, that God came in the form of a man, and he got on a train to go to Mexico. And he said it was on that train where he remembered some words and heard some words in his mind that Master Fard Muhammad had told him, that do you think men will be left alone on saying they believe and will not be tried? Hmm. And when he was on his way to Mexico, he heard and remembered that, got off the train, and then he was arrested by the FBI and some other things and sent to prison. And that's actually where the Nation really begins, is when he got arrested and went to prison. But he was on his way to Mexico. And then eventually he got to Mexico in 1971 and 72. He bought a home in Mexico, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, which is still there, in Cuernavaca. Wow. And it's a beautiful home. And that's where he raised some of his children. And that's where Minister Farrakhan has raised some of his children as well. So we have now second and third generation members of the Farrakhan and Muhammad family that are Mexicanos. They're Mexican citizens.
Yeah.
They speak the language. They know the culture. They've grown up there. And the reason for that is the Honorable Elijah Muhammad knew that one day we would be the majority, not just in numbers, but in our influence in the world.
Mm.
And he was already planning back since the 50s and 60s for our union together, that we would never have to pick up a weapon. We could just take over with our numbers and our unity.
And in some of the lessons, what I found interesting was the, I don't know how to quote. I haven't studied that to that level, but there's a section that says with the 2 million Indians.
Oh yeah, that's our lessons.
So, and exactly, and so from an early point, they still were talking about indigenous people of color from around the world, which is what I always found interesting. So, you know, the language of message to the black man was used in the books, but oftentimes I would read some of those things and I say, you know what, that applies to me as Latino. I'm Dominican, so yes, I have African ancestry. Absolutely. But even if I was completely indigenous, I feel like some of that can apply to me as well.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I always found interesting and really useful about some of the teachings of the Nation of Islam, where I've shared with some of my friends, even though I've never been a member myself. Right. I say, you know, you want to take another term I learned from you, like the best part of anything you study and try and share it with the world. Or so whatever made sense to me, whatever I thought that I can explain to others, be it in any kind of religious traditions or any sort of knowledge that I come across, I always try to share with my peers.
Yeah.
That's kind of one of the reasons why we started this whole podcast, La Verdad Podcast, where Christian and I would always have these type of conversations. Yeah. We say, you know what? It'd be a cool way to document it and let it kind of everyone else in on our little conversations and kind of some of our friends. So,
I think even the La Verdad, you know, the title.
Yeah.
Who cares about the religion, the label you put on it? Is it true or not? At the end of the day,
that's
I can
what matters
believe
to me.
Yeah, if I can believe that there's an airplane outside.
Yep.
That doesn't mean it's true. So what we want is the truth, you know, and that's the thing. And you said it so beautifully. And that's why people, one of the things I always want to look at, because it's the same thing I did, brother. Mm-hmm. You know, when I first met Minister Farrakhan, I was blessed to meet him when I first became a member of the Nation within a few months. Mm-hmm. And we were in a meeting and he asked me where my family was from. And then he told me, put the teachings in a way that your people will understand them.
Yeah.
Because that's ultimately what it is. It's not about people subordinating themselves to our way. Mm-hmm. It's about the truth amplifying who they are and allowing them to be the best part of who they are. And so the Master Fard Muhammad, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, told us that if you could succinct and put all of his teachings into the most basic form, it would be six words: accept your own and be yourself. Okay. See, but in this world, you're not allowed to be yourself.
Exactly.
Everyone's mixed up about what that is. So you got people arguing about, oh, I'm indigenous. No, I'm Afro-Mex. Now it's, I'm trying to be recognized as whatever that is, an Afro-Mexican. Africa, which is not the original name of the place. Mexico, yeah. It's not the original name of that place. So now you got people naming themselves after these things that aren't, they can't properly define you.
Exactly.
And so at the end of the day, what am I? I'm a human being. I'm an expression of divinity. We're allowed to wear the names of God, like Muhammad. Mm-hmm. That's an attribute of God, only because we're able to reflect that.
Yeah.
But you can, if I can put all the labels on me if I want to, but if I don't live a life that reflects that, what's the point of it?
Yeah.
So even like religion, and religion is probably the worst of it. Catholic, Muslim, Christian, Jehovah, and then within each one
you have denominations.
Breakdown. Yeah.
And that's what we were talking about, because at first I don't have too much knowledge of Islam, you know, and I was telling Carlos where when I was in college I was a theology major, but within Christianity was my, you know, so I could talk about Christianity and all of the other sects and denominations within Christianity, but to me this was very interesting to have, because it's very similar conversation and very detailed, very deep into it, and I think it all goes back to what you mentioned in the beginning, was the whole you were curious to know something and they wouldn't give you the answer, and now you're giving us answers that I'm like sitting here and my mind's blowing, like I'm like, whoa, this is crazy, like
planting the seeds.
It's
interesting, there's a verse in the Quran, which that's another thing we do during Ramadan, is we read the whole book a portion a day, so by the end of the month, at the end of 30 days, you break it into 30 parts and you read the whole book.
Okay.
And it's interesting because the Quran reads real different. A lot of the stories are similar, but the way it's written is different. The Quran is revealed as a conversation between God and his servant. So you're actually reading where God is saying to Muhammad, say thus and thus and this. And then he tells them, remind them of what I said to Moses. And you'll see that it correlates perfectly with the story of the Bible. Jonah is in the Quran, Daniel, David, of course, Moses, Noah, and the story of the flood, all of that. Joseph, a whole chapter in there is to Joseph. The 19th chapter of the Quran is named Maryam, which is after the mother of Jesus, Mary.
Okay.
That's the Arabic way you say Mary. And so there's a verse in there that says, they did not become divided into sects and tribes till knowledge came to them. So it's interesting. It's always when truth comes, and then everybody wants to take the truth, and I want you to look at it like I look at it.
Which is kind of an
unnatural way, because if we all looked at it the same way, what's the point of you?
Exactly.
I already have your perspective in me. What do I need you for?
I've also heard kind of your titles a few different things. I've heard you called the Spanish speaking representative to the Minister Louis Farrakhan, and the Latino representative sometimes.
Yeah, and you know, those are terms, he doesn't like the term Latino.
Yeah.
People use that a lot.
That's why I hesitated to say it, because I know that.
He said, you know, he doesn't care about those titles.
Yeah.
Even for the fact that we call ourselves student ministers, he said, because student means you haven't achieved that thing yet. So all of us are, even, you know, he's a student. Every time he introduces himself, even though he's been doing this for 60 years, he's been doing this longer than I've been alive, and all of us probably have been alive.
Yeah.
He's been doing this specific work for 60 years. He still comes out and he always says, I'm a student of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. And most of us wouldn't have the humility to do that, because everybody looks at him as the leader, but he never will. And it's to teach us that don't try to rob the man who taught you or the people. Let them get connected directly to the man that's the source of you. And that's ultimately his strength, is he's not trying to teach us to be servants of his.
Yeah.
He's trying to have us be servants of the people. Because if you're really serving the people,
you get a little closer to them.
Sure. Because if you're really serving the people, you'll see that the God in them.
Yeah.
And he said that's what keeps him fueled, is knowing that there's God in each and every human being. And if he can spark that awake in them, then he's done his job.
Okay. Wow. But with that role to be looked at as a representative, because the people we would call Latino today, right? You would be one of those folks who would probably get in contact with them if they were in your area. Have you came across any challenges?
Absolutely.
With kind of representing, you know, Islam in general, and
absolutely
that knowledge.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, there's been, it's changed since 9/11.
Oh, yeah.
Before 9/11, nobody knew what Islam was.
Okay.
Now, in the last, you know, 10 years, I don't have to go explain as much what Islam is in the communities. But I'll never forget the first year after 9/11, I was invited to Waukegan to this huge Catholic church up there. I forgot what it's called right now, but it's in Waukegan. It had to be 2,000 people out there.
I'm not from Illinois. Is that like a suburb?
Oh, yeah. It's
no, north Waukegan, north, yeah. It's like it's a city outside of, like, kind of like an Aurora. Or,
all right, cool, exactly. Cool. Got it.
In Waukegan. And it's almost all Mexican now. Mm-hmm. And it used to be an all-white suburb up there. And it's a huge Catholic church because of that. They do a huge ceremony each year to La Virgen.
La
Virgen. But they were commemorating the one-year anniversary of 9/11, and they asked me to come up and speak. And all I did is read to them the words from Minister Farrakhan. And afterwards, it was like literally 2,000 people, maybe 3,000 outside. They did a prayer ceremony with candles and walked around the church, put out the candles, said a prayer. They read the names of all of the victims, especially the undocumented victims. Mm-hmm. They were from Latin America. But there was a Mexican woman who came up to me afterwards. And she was real serious. I'll never forget her. She had to be in her 50s. And she said to me, she's like, you know, after that happened last year, she was speaking in Spanish the whole time, but she said, after that happened last year, I told myself if I ever saw a Muslim, I would claw their eyes out.
Hmm.
And she said, but after hearing you speak today, she said, in what you read, she said, I realized I had been ignorant and I didn't know what I was talking about. And she asked me where she could get a Quran. Mm-hmm. And that has been more of what I encounter. People who didn't know at all really what Islam is, they, outside of whatever they saw in a movie or on the TV. Yeah. And now they're becoming intrigued by it. And they're like, you know, I heard this. And then there's the telenovelas that have been out too about like the, I forgot what it was called now. I forgot the name of it. It was a couple out now that have to do with sort of a Islamic
terrorist and
exactly like and stuff like that. So
I think my mom watches some of those.
Yeah, all of ours do, you know. So you have this presence now, but now it's a morphed presence.
Yeah.
Because also something that the minister always makes it very valuable to us is I've met a lot of Latino Muslims, but you can't tell because they start looking like the Arab brothers. They start dressing like them. They start they even take on the accents of them. And that's not what God came to do. He came to allow us to be ourselves. So it's never for us to be subjugated to somebody else. It's for us to be ourselves, but the best part of ourselves, so that you could find unity with the way Muslims express themselves in Alaska as Eskimos is going to be totally different from the brothers in Jamaica and the sisters in Mexico. And it should be different. And I was looking at a YouTube video of some Mayan brothers and sisters who are Muslims.
I saw that.
And it's beautiful because they're taking on some of them Arab names, or I won't say Arab names. They're not Arab names. They're names that are in Arabic of the attributes of God, which we have a right to do. But like mine, Minister Farrakhan gave me the last name Muhammad, but my mom gave me the name Abel. And he does that because he respects the mother who gave birth. But the last name all of us have is carried from our either slave masters or our colonizers and conquerors. So those are not our native names at all. So there's a brother and a sister I met. One of them is from Africa who wears still one of the African indigenous names. They don't have to get an X.
That was going to be one of my questions.
How long usually do you have to have the X before
being there's no limit on it. I was blessed to come in and I got married. I came into the mosque in 1998 and I got married in 2001. So I only wore it for 3 years, the X. And then when I got married, I was allowed to get the name Muhammad. But there's no limit. There's some brothers who've been in the mosque 40 years and they still have their X.
And legal paperwork and everything will have the X?
You don't have to. Okay. Some do. Yeah. I know some who go and get the X on their legal documents, but you don't have to. Okay. You don't even have to. I mean, you don't technically have to get Muhammad because you don't want to. We're not into paying the government to recognize us for the names. Yeah. Some do. Some don't. Sometimes some people have been able to get it changed without having to pay anything. Yeah. Others don't. But it's the way we acknowledge ourselves now. Okay. But that name is usually some people have gotten the name Kareem. Some have gotten the name Ali, and it just is from inspiration where the minister looks at the characteristics of a person and will say, you know, I know one of the brothers who's real good friends, Jason Kareem, he had been Jason 2X for years, and then one day he is the director of our school, and the minister said, you know, I was looking at you on the program the other day, 2X, he goes, Kareem, the name Kareem came to me, so that's he's now Jason Kareem.
Okay.
But they leave the first name for whatever your parents named you out of respect for that was something that hopefully was inspired that, that they gave you that name. So I know when I met the minister one day at his dinner table, he asked me about my first name, Abel, because he said he loved it. And he asked me to thank my mother for giving me that name.
Yeah.
And so even that, I mean, it he sparked for me to be able to discuss it with my parents.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And to them, they have a much better idea of what I do now. But 20 years ago when I first started, like I said earlier, they didn't know what Islam was. Now it's to the point where they don't have pork in their house.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Okay.
So it's gradual, but it takes time. They're not Muslims. They're still Christians, but we never used to pray together as a family. Mm-hmm. Now when we go over for dinner, they want to start with prayer.
That's good.
And that's something they got from seeing me and my children do that as we do it. So you can still, you know, you can make an impact. And ultimately, the minister told us success is not everybody calling themselves Muslims or this or that or dressing a certain way. He said success is our people living better.
Yep.
And that's our ultimate aim.
That's awesome, man. That's great. And that's something that I didn't know.
You know?
And which is awesome that you were able to come here and talk to us and speak the truth, because there's going to be a lot of people that will never know that, you know, and never understand that.
And I think you also have some people who, when they hear the term Nation of Islam, they think Malcolm X and they think of the whole controversy between the split. And whether I was telling Christian earlier, I know there's a lot of misinformation out there as well. And so, could you maybe share a bit about that split between Malcolm X and Minister Farrakhan? And
You know, that happened, and we got, and I would advise everybody, if you get a chance, if you go to NOI.org, there's the last lecture the minister did about 3 weeks ago, right after the Muhammad Ali funeral that happened on that Friday. The minister spoke at the mosque that Sunday, and it's called the Life and Times of Muhammad Ali. And actually, who you get to hear speak right before the minister speaks is Minister Abdul Rahman, who used to be named Captain Sam. Okay. And he was Muhammad Ali's trainer.
Okay.
He was one of the people on his team. And he's the person who actually taught Muhammad Ali, who was then Cassius Clay, Islam. It wasn't Malcolm. It was for 2 or 3 years, Cassius Clay had been Cassius X and had joined the mosque. But it was Captain Sam who was in Miami with him, training him and teaching him. I loved Malcolm because when I read the autobiography, I wanted to meet his teacher.
Yeah.
You know, and I
that's how I came across Message to the Black.
Yeah, exactly.
Man.
Same with me, and that's when I started. I had never even heard of Minister Farrakhan. I didn't know it. I'd heard him in rap songs, and I didn't know who he was. And I went and dug up all the books of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. And everywhere I was looking for Mexican, because you know that's who I was identifying myself with. So all in the books, I'm always, and he doesn't hardly ever mention Mexico. There's a couple of key places where he does, though, in Message to the Black Men. And in particular, it's one area where he says who's welcome to the Muslim public meetings, because we didn't allow, and we still don't, we don't allow Caucasians into our meetings for several reasons. They could watch the webcast, but we don't allow them into the building because we still don't know how to relate to them as people. And they don't know how to relate to us. So we have a great relationship with white people. Whenever they've come, we've had mayor, when he was the mayor, Mayor Daley came to the mosque, and we've had people who come as guests invited, and we have a great interaction with them, but they're not allowed to come in and be members at this point because neither us nor them have gotten over the sickness of white supremacy. But when I read Message to the autobiography of Malcolm, I didn't like, I loved everything up until when I saw Malcolm turn from his teacher, because I just felt like, just to me, as somebody who grew up in the streets, it felt wrong. Even if you thought he was wrong in what you found out, why would you now go to the same media and the enemy that you know put, did all this stuff to your people? I never could understand or rationalize what would make you go to Mike Wallace. Just me personally, you know. And then when I heard Captain Sam, my brother, that I was telling you on that tape, he mentioned that when Malcolm had gotten the 90 days out of public for making the statement about the chickens coming home to roost. That was a red light to me, because I was like, all right, if you're a student and your teacher says, don't say nothing about the president or his assassination, why would you still press that issue and then say something that could possibly be taken as disrespectful? So then, and I always thought Malcolm had gotten kind of thrown out of the nation. He never got thrown out of the nation. He was given 90 days where he couldn't speak in public. And if we have our own laws where if you break certain laws, you actually can't come amongst the community. You're exiled for a certain amount of time. If you, fornication, you can get a year or more. Adultery, the same. You can, and if it's multiple acts, you can get 3 to 5 years. You know, we don't send you to prison. You just can't come to the temple and be around us. So we have laws, not uncommon like some other groups have within our limited authority that we can exercise. So I always thought he had been thrown out of the mosque for 90 days. No, he'd only been given that he couldn't speak like and do lectures for 90 days. So he went to Miami to be where Cassius Clay or Muhammad Ali was training. And he had asked Captain Sam, hey, you think it would be okay if I stopped by the gym to see the workout today? And they told him, and at that time, Muhammad Ali didn't, he was still known as Cassius Clay. Yeah. He hadn't changed his name. He hadn't won the championship yet. He didn't want it known that he was a Muslim yet. He was already Cassius X, but they were keeping it very low key. For whatever reasons, he has the right to his privacy. Nobody, you know, you don't ask all the other boxers what their religion is. So when he told him no, Malcolm still went to the gym. And that day the media was there and they took pictures of it. And the next day in the paper, it was that Malcolm X is recruiting Cassius Clay. Well,
oh yeah,
Cassius was already Cassius X.
Yeah.
So they were, again, the media was way late, but they're painting their narrative of it. Wow. Now, the thing you got to ask is, why would Malcolm show up? If you ask the man, hey, you think it's a good idea if I go? And he says, no, that's a terrible idea.
Yeah.
Because the media is going to be there and they're going to, you know what they're going to do.
Yeah.
So why would you show up? Let them do it. Knowing you, Malcolm was smart enough to know exactly how the media functions. That's why he was able to handcuff him in all the dialogues and arguments. But at the end of the day, you know, the minister told us he talked with Malcolm. The last time he talked with him, they were sitting in a car and he was talking about the domestic life of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. And the minister was showing him from the Holy Quran where the messenger of God is allowed wives, just like Prophet Muhammad did. And he showed Malcolm. He said, Malcolm told him, I already know that, but you can't handle that. And he said, I wish it was me. This is Malcolm talking to Minister Farrakhan at the time. He said, I wish it was you being an example for me and not me being an example for you.
Oh, okay.
And the minister told us on the lecture that I mentioned on the life and times of Muhammad Ali, he said he finally realized that all of those lives of Muhammad Ali, of Malcolm X, they were sacrificed so that he could be better. He wouldn't have to walk in the same mistakes or make the same errors that everyone else had made in front of him. And 60 years later, he's sort of the last man standing. Yeah. You know, so he's everyone else is gone.
Yeah, no, that's a great breakdown. Thank you.
No problem.
And we're getting closer right now to our hour here, and I just wanted to thank you so much. We have so much to talk about, man. I have so many other questions in my mind, and maybe we could do a follow up show in the future.
I'd love to.
You know, there's so many things that I want to pick your brain about and all that. So.
And if I could just say this, because I forgot to mention it before, you know, there's something that I got from Islam that in most other religions and even from other Orthodox branches you don't get. Is there's always this disrespect of the indigenous people and in the native ways, you know, that they're called savages, that they're called backwards, when savage people didn't build pyramids.
Yeah.
You know, it's not spooky people who thought that they had to sacrifice a human being for the sun to rise. Mm-hmm. There's no way somebody who could know the math and science to build thought that they had to sacrifice a human being for the sun to rise.
Yeah.
Did we have rituals? Absolutely. I've heard two things, though, that are key from a brother who's a Mayan priest or shaman, whatever you want to call him, in Mexico when I was in the Yucatan. He told me that two things, that the Maya know the name Allah. It's a very sacred word to them because it's what's called a homonym, where it's the same way forward or backwards when you pronounce it. And he showed us a place where he prays, where the Mayas would pray, and it's like an arch looking into the ocean.
Hmm.
And when you say the name Allah, it just reverberates everywhere. He said that's one of the names that they would pray with, and that only certain high-level priests were allowed to know it, so the average person was still not allowed to know that knowledge. And so like you mentioned earlier, the knowledge is key. But then also amongst the, what you call the tribes, the indigenous people here, there is knowledge that has been kept hidden that little by little is being now told to the people because the time is coming closer to it. I had a brother who's one of the elders near the Four Corners area who's a medicine man. He told me that the, you know, you've always seen, if you've seen the indigenous circle where it's got red, black, yellow, and white.
Yeah.
And people always said that that represents the four human, you know, white people, Asians, red people, and black people, or brown. Sometimes it's red or brown.
Yeah.
He said, no, it doesn't represent the people. It represents four schools of thought.
Mm.
And when those four schools of thought come back together, it's to show us that the time was coming. They had all separated, and now they were coming back together. And there's a brother from Peru who grew up and was born here. Now he lives in L.A., who told me of the prophecy of the condor and the eagle.
Yeah.
He said, and that's the prophecy of the tribes of the North America and the tribes of the South America. The South being represented by the condor, the North being represented by the eagle. And he said that there's a prophecy that we would all come together, and it includes the black and indigenous coming together within that prophecy. Yeah. But the average one of our people doesn't know that.
Yeah.
And so because of that, they were allowed to be misused. So Indian, being an indigenous person in Mexico, is like a cartoon, a caricature. Mm-hmm. They come and they dance and they put on a costume. But what does it mean? The rituals all have meaning. Mm-hmm. And if the rituals didn't save us from the enemy 500 years ago,
mm-hmm.
but our ancestors carried it on for a reason, then there must be still something in the ritual that we haven't gotten the meaning of. The ritual is just a sign, but what is it a sign of?
Mm-hmm.
And I think we're at the time now where there's no more signs. This is the time of the fulfillment of all those rituals. Yeah. All the in the Christian terms, we would say prophecies.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But our ancestors didn't speak like that. They said ceremony.
Yeah.
But it's the same concept. It's just in their own expression. And if we got more, as Brother mentioned earlier, into digging, we could see past the sign and understand what the sign represents. And in what it, the sign represents is where our unity is, because at the end of the sign is truth.
Yeah.
And that's the only thing we could really bond on. Everything else is going to be separate for us. But the truth is the one thing that you might have your perspective on it, I'll have mine, but we have to agree truth is truth.
So. Yep. Wow. Those are some deep words, man.
Thank you. That's a great way to... So wrapping up, I just have one last quick question. Sure. It could be a quick answer. As our friend walked, I won't say his name since I don't know if he wants it, but he's actually from Flint, Michigan.
Mm.
And I saw that during the whole Flint water crisis, you went with a group of people up to Flint. But in general, just on Facebook, I see that you're at a lot of events. You lead a very busy life. Does it get exhausting for you? And how do you manage that? That's what I want to wrap it up with, something that can apply to everyone listening.
You know, honestly, and I get, like I said, my example from Minister Farrakhan, I traveled more than ever. Last year, I traveled at least twice a month all over the country while still working to support my family.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And, I mean, I was gone for at least 3 to 4 days every week to 2 weeks. And the closer we got to the 20th anniversary of the Million Man March on 10-10-15 for the Justice or Else March, that last 2 months, I was gone at least every weekend.
Wow.
Literally, all the way up to the last weekend. And everywhere, when I realized that the minister is now 83 years old, everywhere I went, he had already gone and was someplace else. And then I would meet him at the next city. And then by the time I got there, he'd have 3 or 4 meetings. I couldn't keep up with him still at 40 years old. Yeah. And I'm literally half his age. And he was ill. And doing it. And when he told us what fuels him, he said it's love for God and love for the people that God came to resurrect.
Yep.
We don't believe in a resurrection after you die. We believe that the resurrection is mental and spiritual while we're alive. This is our grave right now. And so then we have to, that's prayer time, but this is what has to be resurrected. And the thing that resurrects us is the truth.
Yeah.
Nothing else. So it's the love for our people, the love for God, his people, and what he came to do for them. That's the thing that keeps me going. Whenever I get tired, I look at the minister and I look at the condition of our people. And, you know, there's a scripture that says, you know, God looked and he saw that there was no man. So he said, who would go for them? Yeah. And there was one of the prophets who stood up and said, here I am, send me, I'll go. When we accept that, that's a mission that we accept till the day that we are buried. And it's a mission that if you love God and his people, the people can't tire you out. Yep. And that's what I'm learning to do, is falling in love with the mission that God came to give to us as a people. Perfect. And in that, I don't get tired like that. I may get sick or get allergies and stuff, but I end up, you know, my wife heals me with some good tea and herbs and stuff. Yeah. And then I get back to, and that's the other thing I'd say, having a wife or a partner in your life that agrees with and loves your mission, because she continues to teach my daughters while I'm not home to love dad and understand while they're gone. I'm not just out running around chasing dollars or some women or something. I'm trying to make a better world for the daughters that were, and our sons in the world. So that to me is the key, is that you got to love it, and then you got to marry somebody who has the same love for what you love.
Interesting.
All right. That was some great words of wisdom, mi gente. That you just finished listening to student minister Brother Abel Muhammad, and we hope you like the show. Again, remember, if you've been listening and you want to keep promoting it, share with a friend, subscribe, rate, review on iTunes, SoundCloud. You'll find us on Google Play Music. We're trying to make it easy for you to get this information. And once again, thank you so much.
Muchas gracias, man. Muchas gracias
for coming in. Man. Thank you.
And if they want to find more information, where should they go?
You know, there's a couple of places they could go to abelmohammed.com. Mm-hmm. Look me up on Facebook or Twitter at Abel Mohammed. Also, it's ABELMUHAMMAD. Facebook, okay. Twitter, Instagram, all of that stuff.
Awesome. Muchas gracias. And thank you for listening to La Verdad Podcast.
All right. Peace, mi gente. Peace.